Welcome to the I Can Relate podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Miller. On this podcast, we talk to relatable and amazing people with real life struggles and joys, sharing the goodness of God. Each episode is designed to bring encouragement to your life. So make sure you subscribe today and share with a friend who might need the same encouragement. You're listening to episode 14. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. My guest today is Shonda Cool. She is wife to Cody, where they pastor in Michigan. She has three girls and is pregnant with their son. And today, Shonda will be sharing her beautiful testimony of how she came to know the Lord. And she will also encourage us on how we can handle being forsaken by others and how we are never forsaken by Christ. Friends, turn up the volume, grab your coffee, and let's get started.
Becky, I'm really excited to be on your podcast. I've been listening to it, and I'm just really humbled that you would have me on.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on, and it is an honor to have you here. And I'm always excited to hear other people's testimonies of how they came to know Christ. And it encourages me to continue to be a light and share the gospel with others. But I also think it is awesome to have people share their testimony on the podcast, because we don't know who is listening that doesn't know Jesus Christ. So if you could share with me and our listeners of how you came to know Christ, that would be awesome, because I know that people will be encouraged by it.
I grew up in a moral home, a mom and a dad who loved us, who took us on vacations, who made memories with us, were responsible. They both, you know, were hardworking people. And like I said, a moral home. But as far as the gospel, as far as salvation being taught, and us being, you know, in a local church that was teaching the gospel, that was missing. And I always had this question in my mind of why am I here? How did I get here on this earth? Why am I alive? These deep thoughts that I would have from a really young age, and from a very young age, fear of death. And what happens when you die? That was my number one question, was what happens to you when you die? Is it just darkness and you don't even know what happened and there's literally nothing there and you're not aware of anything? There is no afterlife? Yeah. Or do you die and go somewhere else? You know, I would watch movies and get all kinds of crazy ideas in my head of what might happen to you when you die. But that was a big concern of mine, and I would lose sleep over that. So as, you know, just growing up through the years, God really brought friendships into my life that I look back now and I see them as, although they weren't Christians, they weren't believers, they were good people. And my path could have gone a really bad direction. Growing up, just not knowing the Lord, not having a local church family that's mentoring me, not having any of that, not having the truth of God's word. I could have gone down a really bad path, and I really feel spared from a lot of that. And I just look back and I give God glory for that, that he gave me really good friends that kept me out of trouble, basically. Yeah. And I was kind of the one in the group that was like, why don't we try this? Why don't we do that? That were bad choices. And my friends were like, no, Shonda, we don't do that. Like, why would you want to do that? They always were reining me back in. Okay. I was more the edgy one, and they were reining me back in all the time. And I'm not saying like I was going to go be a criminal or anything like that. Yeah. You know, normal kid stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Normal kid stuff and teenage stuff. But I just am so thankful. And several of those people, since we graduated high school, have become believers. Oh, and we've reconnected like in the last 5 years, because they have contacted me and shared their salvation testimony with me, because I had gotten saved at the end of our high school years. So they all knew.
Right.
But then it wasn't until all these years later that they came to know Christ, and they look back and they're like, I just remember when you became a Christian, and
yeah, 'cause you
that
were
really had an
high school, right?
I was a senior. It was the end of my junior year. I was going into my senior year.
Okay.
So I'll get to that. So I was searching. Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted answers. I was searching. I was a cheerleader from elementary school all the way till I graduated high school. And after school, we had practice and we would wait in the commons area there after school for our coach to show up. So we just kind of be hanging out. And these two girls came walking up to us one day. And we, you know, being, you know, upperclassmen, you pretty much know everybody. So we knew these girls are not from here. And they did. They walked up to us and they started their sales pitch, if you want to call it that, for their church. And all my friends, my good friends that kept me out of trouble, they were like, gone. We don't want any of this. And I was the only one that stayed back to listen to these girls invite me to their teen rally that they were having for their open house Sunday at their church. And I just really was drawn to the one girl. Her name was Danielle. And she just had this like joy about her and this spunk. And I just, you know, I really liked that about her. To be honest, it could have been some kind of cult. I didn't even care. I just thought she was nice.
Yeah.
She invited me to their open house. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go with you. And then she said, well, can I get your phone? This was back in the day. Okay.
Yeah, right.
She said, can I get your phone number? And I will call you so that we can set up a place to meet and sit together. And I said, yeah, sure. I give her my phone, like phone number, as in like calling your house, not
a
cell phone.
Landline, not a cell phone.
A landline.
Yep.
Gave her the landline number. And then I went on my way and forgot all about it, to be honest. The week went on, and I believe it was Saturday morning, my mom and I would do our ritual errands and running around, doing our Target run, you know. Mm-hmm. And my mom said, oh, by the way, Shonda, tomorrow Dad and I have this church thing to go to. Oh, church. It reminded me, hey, I have a church thing to go to as well. And that was, you know, it was like, oh, okay, you know. That's interesting. We both have church things to go to and we don't go to church.
Right.
So we go home, and then later that night, Saturday night, sure enough, the phone rings, the landline phone rings, and it's this girl, Danielle, and she is, you know, we get talking and stuff and we set up where we're going to meet. And I say, so what church is this again? And she told me the name of the church. And then I asked my mom, I'm like, Mom, what church are you and Dad going to? She tells me the name of the church. It was the same church.
Wow.
My dad had gotten invited. He's in law enforcement. And one of his officers had been killed and was a member at that church, and his funeral was there.
Okay.
And one of the pastors at that church had gotten in touch with my dad to invite my dad to this open house Sunday for the law enforcement appreciation portion of that open house Sunday service. And then this girl, Danielle, who was a senior in high school and a part of the youth group, had invited me for the teen rally. So we both got invited to the exact same service, just through completely different people and means and for different purposes. So I just couldn't believe that we were invited to the same exact church. So we all went together the next morning, and I met up with Danielle, sat with her, and, you know, it was very large church, kind of overwhelming. I'm definitely one of those kids that gets distracted. And if I sit in the back at church, I have to really focus because I get very distracted by all the people. And we sat in the back and I was distracted by all the people, but, you know, I was just kind of taking it all in. And to be honest, whoever the speaker was, I don't remember his name. I don't remember really anything he said. I don't remember his sermon. What I do remember is at the very end, the prayer time. And during the prayer time, he asked the question, you know, everyone had their heads bowed, eyes closed. And he asked the question, if you were to die today, would you 100% be sure that heaven would be your home? I'd just like to rejoice with you if you would raise your hand. And I'm thinking, that's like my big question is what happens when you die? Is there a I liked the idea of heaven. Yeah. And I would have called myself a spiritual person. I really did believe there is a spiritual world. I really did believe in that. There is like something out there greater than us.
Yeah.
I just didn't know what that something was. So I liked the idea of heaven. Mm-hmm. And that was my question, right? And he asked this question. And I'm like, that's my question, you know? And I peek and I'm looking around. And, you know, I'm sitting in the back so I could see everybody. And all these kids are raising their hand that they knew they were going to heaven. Mm. And I was thinking to myself, oh man, I must have missed that point, you know? Like, I must not have been paying attention because I missed that. Because they all know, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I felt left out, you know? So then he said, okay, put your hands down. And if you weren't able to raise your hand a minute ago, I'd like to pray for you. If you don't know for sure that if you were to die today, heaven would be your home, if you could just slip up your hand, I'd like to pray for you. Well, I was also the kid who not only got distracted, but also didn't want attention drawn to me. So yeah. I wasn't the kid. If I didn't understand something in school and the teacher said, does anyone have any questions? I ain't doing it. I'm not going to be the one that looks dumb. Yeah. So I didn't raise my hand.
Yep.
Yeah. I just was like, yeah, I understand. Nope.
I'll figure it out later.
Yeah. And that's what all my smart friends were for. They helped me out and they made sure I graduated. No joke. Mm-hmm. And Danielle must've been peeking because she kind of elbowed me and she said, hey, do you know for sure, you know, that you'd go to heaven? And I was like, no. And she said, well, do you want to know? And I was like, why would you not want to know? You know, that's what I was thinking was why would you not want to know? And I said, yeah, of course. And she said, okay, well, here, let's go. So we left the rally and went somewhere private. And she had her Bible with her. And she opened up her Bible. And I knew what a Bible was, you know.
Sure.
She opened up her Bible and started sharing with me very simple verses about what Jesus had done, that I'm not good enough to get myself to heaven. And because I'm not good enough to get myself to heaven, Jesus took care of it for me. And all I have to do is literally nothing, basically, just believe in him and confess with my mouth and believe him with my heart. And I just couldn't believe it was so simple. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it was right there. You know, we had a Bible in our home. It was there all along. So simple. I just needed somebody who would take the time and have the courage. Here's this church girl. I found out later that her dad was the pastor of that church. This church girl grew up in a conservative church her whole life, walks onto the campus of this public high school, walks up to a group of intimidating upperclassmen cheerleaders and invite them to church.
Yeah.
Is bold enough to get my phone number. Is bold enough to actually call me on Saturday night and then meet up with me on Sunday and sit with me, is bold enough to elbow me during the service and ask me and confront me with the truth, and then is competent enough to, you know, very simply show me the gospel.
Yeah.
I just, like, my mind is blown. You know what I mean? Looking back now, my mind is blown over that. And I will always be blown away by that. Just the courage that a teenage girl had. And, you know, here I am now, a mom of an almost teenage girl. Yeah. My oldest turns 13 this year. And it's really cool, you know, that you don't have to wait till you're a pastor's wife or something to confront somebody with the gospel.
Or young adult. You can do
it. Yeah. Yeah. You can do it now. And
on her part, and a life yielded to God to obey the prompting of the Holy Spirit to go say, go give that girl an invitation. Go talk to her, because it's boldness no matter who you talk to, but it's boldness, I think, so much when you're a teenager, because there's so much acceptance that you want, and you don't want to feel awkward. And so, yeah, it's such a beautiful testimony on her part as well.
Yes, for sure. Totally. And it's definitely something that, I mean, you know, I'm literally and eternally grateful.
So we're just going to get into our topic now of feeling forsaken, and what, how to deal with that. And Shonda's going to expound on this topic. And the first question I have for you, Shonda, is what causes us to feel forsaken by others?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it's a great question. What causes us, that word cause there, is so important. We need to ask why. Why do I feel this way?
Yeah.
Man, I'm feeling forsaken by this person, by this spouse, by this friend, by this mentor, by whoever. Why do you feel that way? Mm-hmm. And that's really important. And I think that just having an understanding of how we are a created being, and in that creation, we were created by a God who intentionally made us in his image. And we know that God created us because he wants a relationship with us. So if we're created in his image, we too are relational beings.
Yeah.
So it's not that we shouldn't seek out relationships. And it's not that we should guard ourselves up so that we don't get hurt.
Right.
In those relationships. We just need to navigate them biblically. And so when we feel forsaken by others, first of all, a good question to ask is, did we put expectations on that human that were only meant to be put on God? For example, acceptance, you know?
Yeah.
We seek out acceptance through social media, through likes, through people remembering our birthday, our husband remembering our anniversary, maybe physically, you know, we want that acceptance from our spouse or from our friends or our family. But that's something that we're only supposed to expect from Jesus. He accepts us.
Yeah.
Another example is Jesus is the only one that's ever promised that he will never leave us or forsake us. People leave us. Humans leave us. Even the bond of marriage, there are spouses that leave.
Yeah.
And you end up feeling forsaken. And the reality is that that's an expectation that we placed on a sinner, that we were only meant to place on Christ.
Yeah.
We can expect Jesus to never leave us. He has promised that he will never leave us, and we can expect that from him. He will never leave us. But when we put those expectations on our friends that we're only meant to be put onto Jesus, we will end up feeling forsaken. When we are needing comfort, we get a phone call from a doctor, we get some bad news, and we need somebody to comfort us. A lot of times, the first place we go to, we send a text to our bestie, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, we have our bestie or our BFF. So when we put that expectation of you are my best friend forever, and when I get that bad news, that you're going to be there for me to comfort me, and they maybe don't respond to our text message right away, they don't return our phone call, or they're just emotionally unavailable. Right. They're just flat out, they have their own things going on, and they aren't able to be there for us and be the comforter that we need. We are going to feel forsaken by them.
Yeah.
And really, that's unfair to them that we are putting that expectation on them. Jesus is our friend that sticks closer than a brother. Jesus is the one that's our comforter. And that's the only person that we really have a right to put that expectation onto. He's our supplier and our provider. This is like really good with, especially with marriage.
Yeah.
God promises to supply our needs. God promises to be our provider. And as a wife, you're placing yourself under in submission to your husband in an earthly sense to be your supplier and provider. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's Jesus who is your supplier and provider.
Right.
And your husband's just the tool. that he's using to meet your needs. And when we have put that expectation on our husbands, who are sinners, who are not perfect, and they fail us in that area, or they don't meet our expectations, we feel completely forsaken by them. And that's really the feeling of being, man, I feel forsaken by this person. That should be the warning light going off on our dashboard that, hey, there's something wrong here. You've put an expectation on something or someone that you shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And we need to pay attention to that warning light. And we need to ask, why do I feel forsaken by this person? And I guarantee you, it's probably one of these things, that an expectation that we've put on to a human that we're only meant to put on Jesus. And when we find ourselves so disheartened and feeling forsaken, that's an opportunity to turn back to Christ. That's just another opportunity to pay attention to that warning light and turn ourselves back to Christ.
Yeah.
When God uses somebody in my life to meet a need, a human need that I have, I then expect that person to always be there for me.
Mm.
And then when they're not, when they move away, when they are now, you know, have other priorities that come into their life and they're just not able to be the friend that they used to be to me, I feel forsaken.
Mm-hmm.
They left me. I feel forsaken. Mm-hmm. And really, we need to be okay with God choosing to use whoever he wants to use to meet our needs in that moment and in that season of life.
That's really good.
And it's not always going to be the same person.
Yeah.
Just because that friend was there for you during this certain tough time doesn't mean God's going to choose to use that person again. He may never use that person again in your life. And that doesn't mean that they don't love you. That doesn't mean God's forsaken you. It doesn't mean they've forsaken you. It just means God's choosing to use someone else right now.
Yeah.
To encourage you, to, you know, speak truth to you, to maybe, you know, pray with you or be there for you during that hard time.
Yeah.
And so putting that expectation of, you have to be there for me for the rest of your life. You were there for me today, so now you have to be there for me for the rest of your life.
That's really good. And it's a high expectation that isn't,
it sure is.
Isn't possible, really.
For me, it's just choosing to allow myself to be blessed by whoever God puts in my way.
I like that.
Whoever God puts in my way.
Yeah.
And in fact, when you think about it, the fact that he would use this person, this random person, it could be someone in a supermarket, some perfect stranger that you run into who ends up blessing you.
Yeah.
And then the next day, it's maybe a sister-in-law.
Yeah.
For me, a lot of times, to be honest, it's my children.
Yeah.
God, it comes up and pops up in unexpected places. And to me, when you think about that, that shows God.
Yeah.
That he works all these random pieces together for you, to bless you, to be an encouragement to you. It isn't just like all in this little box.
Yeah.
Only these three people are allowed to bless you.
Yeah.
No, he will use all. And that's where you really are able to see God in a magnificent way, is when you recognize they're everywhere. It's all from God.
Yeah.
And that's the best part.
Yeah.
It's not something you manufactured. It's not a safety net that you put together that, okay, when these things happen, this is my safety net of people that I'm going to turn to.
Yeah.
No, it's God. He provides it. We don't manufacture it. He provides this for us.
Yeah. So going on to my next question is, what causes us to feel forsaken by Christ? So you shared with like feeling forsaken by others, but sometimes we feel like, okay, I am praying, or I'm talking to God, or you know, whatever, or this is not coming through the way I expected. And we're feeling like Christ is not there. We're feeling like he is just, you know, not around.
Yes. You
know, we're just all by ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I think this is one that maybe isn't talked about as much. I don't know. I feel like it's more natural for us to talk about how so-and-so forsook us, so-and-so left us, you know, about human relationships, but almost a taboo topic is to ever talk about Christ in that way.
Yeah.
Talk about God in that way, because that is dishonoring. That is not what a good Christian says. That is not how a good Christian talks. So, especially people who have been in church, or especially ministry people, they're the example, right?
Yeah.
You're not allowed to doubt God. You're the one everyone's looking to for strength here.
Sure.
So if you remotely have any doubts or feel forsaken by Christ, what is that communicating to all the people that are looking to you as a leader?
Yeah.
So you don't. We all feel it, but no one wants to talk about it and be honest about it, because it's not allowed. It's not appropriate. It's not, you know, what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Being forsaken by Christ is something everyone experiences, just not everybody really will admit it or talk about it. And it is something that when I see someone hurting and going through that, I try to give them permission to express that, because I've been there. I know what it feels like. First of all, you know, kind of a given is something that we would think of as an unanswered prayer, or something not turning out like we wanted. You know, you pray for something, you ask God for something, you know, it's not something that's outside of God's will.
Yeah.
It's not something that you, you know, are just wanting to consume upon your own lusts. It's something that's a good thing. Like, for example, Lord, I pray that my children would be healthy.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to pray, right?
Yeah.
You would say that that's something that, you know, is, you know, within God's will to pray. It's not something that you're trying to consume upon your own lusts.
Right.
Lord, I pray that you would allow my children to be healthy. And we've always prayed that. And for me, I struggle with fear about all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, all kinds of things. And I mean, here I am, pastor's wife for almost 10 years. And it wasn't until this last year, or it might have been the beginning of this year, I had gone through a really rough season of life, and still kind of coming out of that, you know, beginning of the year. And 2020 hit. We all know what that's been like. And my husband was preaching about something. All I remember is he was talking about fear, and he said, the area you fear the most is the area you trust God the least. And, you know, I kind of just took it in, and I was almost like scoffing at it. I trust God. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a pastor's wife. I trust God, you know, hello, I'm in ministry. Of course I trust God. But I knew exactly what area at that moment that I had fear about. And we had just found out that we're, you know, very surprisingly pregnant. And I had all these fears that came with that. And it was a struggle to not allow those fears to overtake me. And then he said that. So I knew exactly what I had been dealing with in that moment. And it was fear of my child being healthy.
Yeah.
And I just kept thinking about that phrase that the area we fear the most is the area we trust God the least. And as I was the next several days pondering that, meditating on that, praying about it and not in like the super spiritual sense, but praying meaning asking God, what, I trust you, right? You know, just having a conversation with him. Yeah. Like, okay, Lord, yes, I do really have obviously major fears about this, but does this really mean that I don't trust you to take care of? And as I started digging into that, and I wouldn't give up, I was going to just keep on digging into it. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, God, if I don't trust you in this area, that means somewhere in the past, in my mind, you broke my trust in this area. And that's how, what happens with humans. You know, if a spouse or a friend or a family member does something to break our trust, what happens in the future? We have fear.
Mm. Yeah.
That it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, like that sounds pretty disrespectful that I think God broke my trust. Mm. And of course, you know, I just kept following the little trail and it took me all the way back to when our daughter Katie got cancer.
Yeah.
He broke my trust in my eyes. Mm. And I really had to face that and acknowledge that feeling,
yeah,
which is not a pretty thing to acknowledge, mm, or even say. And some people would be like, how dare you think that or feel that, mm, that God broke your trust? How dare you talk about God like that? But I really had to face that, and that,
yeah,
we prayed, God give us a healthy child. And then, you know, when she was 3.5 years old, out of nowhere, healthy child, out of nowhere. One day we wake up, we're a normal family. The next day, we're a cancer family.
Yeah.
And her fate is totally just up in the air, whether she's going to live or die. You know, while we waited for the pathology to come back, you know, we had to go through that. And that's a whole nother thing. But all that waiting of having surgery, having the tumor removed, it getting sent off to the pathologist and waiting for the results to come back. And it's either going to be she most likely will have a wedding or she's never going to have a wedding. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's almost like watching your child die in slow motion.
Yeah.
And then there's this other thing of, but she might be okay. You know?
Right.
She might come out of this okay. And that waiting time. And I had to face that I feel God broke my trust. He allowed this to happen to my child. So he may choose to allow something else bad to happen to one of my other children. Mm. And for me, it's like every single child I have, which we're on number 4 now, is more and more like risk. You know, yeah, it's like, another opportunity for God to maybe choose to give one of my kids something, allow an accident to happen, allow a disease to take them, allow whatever he wants, because, hey, he's done it in the past before, he'll do it again, right? Mm. And so what is that? What do you do with that? Yeah. You feel forsaken. You feel like he forsook you. He broke your trust. Here you asked for something and he didn't allow you to, you know, and Katie's fine, you know.
Yeah.
She's turning 13 this year and she's an amazing, amazing young lady who she's amazing. Oh. And praise the Lord, like it ended up being a cancer that was the one that the doctor said, if your kid's going to have cancer, this is the one you want it to be. And I'm like, okay, is that what you tell people? You know?
Yeah. Okay.
But God walked us through that.
Yeah.
He really did. He didn't just walk us through it. He carried us through it. But what do you do with that? What do you do with that feeling of, you broke my trust, God? And for me, it's the realization that his priority is not my comfort. His priority is what's going to bring me glory. Not me, but him.
Yeah. And that's
what's going to bring him glory.
That leads us to the third question is, how do we pivot from feelings to truth? Because it is so easy to live in that feeling. I mean, to have that feeling that my child could live, could die. I don't know what the path that God is going to take. And my heart goes out to those who have lost a child. And your feeling right now that you're feeling forsaken, your child has passed away. But even speaking to them, how do we pivot from feelings to truth, even in that, when God does actually take the child? And in your case, you still had to pivot from feelings to truth, even because you didn't know what the outcome would be like. And you still have to give those feelings if they arise, like, what if she were to get it in a couple of years? Or what if it were to relapse? Or, you know, your mind can go on and on, and that can control our feelings. But it's the truth that we need to grasp. So, you know, just share that with us.
Yeah, I, you know, my experience has been that for me, not faking that you're okay is like the number one step. And you have to acknowledge all this stuff. You gotta grieve, because in my case, you know, you talked about what if you actually did lose a child. But grief, we feel grief about all kinds of things. It's not always the death of a human life. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the death of a relationship, a friendship, a job, a dream, something that we really have to let go of, that it'll never be the same. You'll never be the same. And you have to grieve over that. And that's the first step in embracing truth.
That's good.
Is allowing yourself to have bleeding, open wounds.
Yeah.
Let yourself have those however long you need, get help from a biblical, Christ-centered, God-centered, hope-filled counselor. And I have, you know, gotten counsel from people. And again, God puts people in your way, mm-hmm. you know, for that purpose. And sometimes you don't have the spiritual strength to do this all by yourself. You need help. Yeah. Seriously, Becky. This is something that I am really passionate about. And it's way more than just having a mentor. This is someone who literally can hold you up when you cannot hold yourself up, and they can speak truth into you. And when your mind can't even, you're so overcome with grief that you can't even make sense of anything. It doesn't matter how much Bible you know. You're just totally out there in the dark, in the darkness.
Yeah.
And having someone who can help you through that is, to me, just so important. I did everything I was supposed to. I followed the path I was supposed to take, and this is what happened. And they feel forsaken. You got to cry out to him and tell him, hey, I feel like this isn't fair. I feel like this, I feel like that. I am angry. You got to tell him that. For me, sometimes I don't know what to say. Music was what gave me words to pray, and having God-centered, hope-centered music. And some things that I learned through that was remembering that the pain that you feel is, this was something that I heard in one of the songs that God brought across my path. He said, let me remember when it hurts that love will have the final word. As long as God is on his throne, I am carried by the hope that love will have the final word. Mm. And so that idea that every time I feel the sting, every time I feel that pain and that hurt, let that remind me that God is on his throne and I am carried by the hope that his love, Christ's love, is going to have the final word. And sometimes whatever pain we're going through on this earth, you know, our life is a vapor on this earth that comes and then it vanishes away. And then we get to be in eternity forever and ever and ever,
yeah,
with no pain, no tears, with our Savior and with all our brothers and sisters in Christ. Mm-hmm. It is going to end. Love will have the final word. And yeah, that was a truth and a biblical principle that God brought to me that really did help me to have that hope that whatever pain we're feeling on this earth, it really is not the end. Yeah. This is not the end.
Right.
And although during our life here on this earth, that specific pain may never go away,
yeah,
eventually we do have a hope. Yeah. It is going to go away eventually.
Yeah.
In the next life, in eternity, it will be gone.
Yeah.
He will wipe away those tears. And there is a lot of things that happen in this life that are never going to be okay. In eternity, it's all going to be okay. We do have that hope that love will have the final word. The other thing is allowing the wounds that we have to be the place where the light gets in. Hmm. And Jesus is the light. And every time we get a wound while we're here living on this earth, because it just happens.
Yeah.
All these wounds that happen, these disappointments, all these hurts and pains, every time we get a wound, we need to see it as, that's just another spot where the light can get in. And that's a beautiful thing, because the more light gets in, the more light can come out of us,
yeah,
to everyone else. We aren't meant to just hold on to all the light. We're supposed to let it come out of us. And the you know, you see it everywhere. The people who have the most scars are the people that are always encouraging somebody else.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's, they don't see it usually. They're the ones like you're trying to encourage and they end up encouraging you.
Yeah.
And the people that have the most scars have the most light sources coming out of them, because they have so many wounds where the light got in and now it's able to shine right back out and shine onto somebody else who is maybe going through something similar. You have to let yourself grieve and really be brutally honest about where you're at,
yeah,
with God and how you're feeling about him and what he's allowed. That's the hard part. That really is the hard part. Mm-hmm. That's the most unpleasant part. That's the hard part. That's the part you never want to go through again, you know?
Yeah.
But you got to get through that part. And then once you come out on the other side, and you have walked through all of the nasty and embraced the truth that, hey, God is on the throne and all your wounds are just another opportunity for him to be the light that gets in. And once you get onto the other side, the last thing that I had here was that you have an unbreakable bond with God now. I mean, you go through something with a friend, or a spouse, and you know, like my husband and I, we've been through things together.
Sure.
Every time we go through a hard time together, we come out on the other side, our bond is stronger and stronger every time.
Yes.
You go through a difficulty with your child, where you maybe have to confront them about some stuff. And you work through it and you get through it and you come out on the other side, you and that child have an even stronger bond,
yes,
after that. And it's the same with God. You get through the nasty and you come out on the other side, you have an even stronger bond,
yeah,
with, and I like that word bond. I really do. And it's an unbreakable bond that will become something you will never forget. And you'll never get over it. you will be talking about it for the rest of your life. That's something to desire, actually.
Yeah.
To have that special bond with God that is so unbreakable. And, you know, although you don't want to go through anything hard in life,
sure,
you're going to go through something hard in life.
Yeah.
It's a fact. So you might as well have an unbreakable bond with God through it, right?
Yeah.
As a result of it. And so I'm really, really thankful. I have something special with God that I didn't have before I went through that.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast. This has been great. Seriously, it's been so encouraging and uplifting to me.
Thanks, Becky.
It has been a pleasure, Shonda. Thank you so much for sharing your heart on the podcast today. Well, that wraps up our episode for today. If you'd like to connect with Shonda, you can find her on Instagram at Shonda_cool. And you can also find me on Instagram at I Can Relate Podcast. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, please share with a friend, and I would be honored if you gave the podcast some stars. Friends, thank you for your support and taking time to listen today. Talk to you next time on the I Can Relate Podcast.